Hello, and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast on Neuroscience Marketing, Mind Reading, and Research. I'm your host, Nancy Bacala, Director of Online Content for the AMA. We're very excited to welcome our special guest, Barbara O'Connell, who is currently the North American Lead for the Global Consumer Neuroscience Practice of Millward Brown. Barbara is responsible for both educating and spreading the word within Millward Brown on the use of their new solutions and interpretation, as well as bringing the offer to clients across North America. Its brainwave measurement, implicit measurement, and eye-tracking solutions are designed to integrate with and enhance the existing and validated Millward Brown offerings. Barbara joined Millward Brown in 1996 and is based in the Fairfield, Connecticut office. She's experienced with brand and advertising tracking, copy testing, brand equity, advertising development research, customer research solutions, and media modeling with a variety of Fortune 100 companies across a range of categories, from FMCG to pharmaceuticals. She held a postdoctoral fellowship at the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California, has a PhD in psychology from the University of California, San Diego, funded largely by a National Science Foundation fellowship, an MA in psychology from the University of Colorado Boulder, and a BA from Johns Hopkins University. Barbara also will be a featured speaker at the AMA's upcoming May 10th virtual event, Marketing and Neuroscience, What Drives Customer Decisions. You can register for this free event by visiting the event channel on marketingpower.com, and you can find Barbara on LinkedIn. Barbara, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Nancy.
You know, I want to start out with just what we mean when we refer to the term neuromarketing. It's been bandied about, certainly, for a number of years now, and I'm wondering how you can tell me you define it.
I had a conversation several months ago when we launched our practice officially in May of 2010, although we've been doing research about the techniques that we're going to adopt for years. But I had a conversation with a former client who I used to work on her business, and she said, oh, so what are you doing now? I said, well, I'm actually the North American lead for our neuroscience practice. And she said, oh, I want to do neuroscience. And I said, well, that's great. I'd be happy to talk with you about what we're doing. And we chatted about other things. And afterwards, I thought to myself, what does she mean, I want to do neuroscience, as if it were sort of a unitary thing, and you could do one thing, and that would count as doing neuroscience. And there are a lot of techniques out there which have sort of migrated from academia and, medical practice, all kinds of things that are through, I think, changes in technology have now become available to marketers. And it's new and exciting and has a lot of promise. But I think it is one of those things that it's just beginning to be adopted, and there's a lot of questions surrounding it. I suppose I would define the term as sort of the application of these techniques to trying to understand what makes consumers or professionals or whomever it is we're interviewing decide to do what it is they're going to do. And certainly we subscribe to the idea that these things are enhancements to, not replacements for, the techniques, the tried and true techniques that we've been using for many, many years to understand why people do the things they do.
You know, back in 2008, Martin Lindstrom kind of got a lot of coverage in his book Biology, where he predicted essentially a revolution in market research that was predicated on the use of these neuroscience techniques in marketing. I'm wondering where you think we're at in that cycle, and primarily in terms of how researchers are really making use of neuroscience techniques, you know, on a daily basis.
Right. Revolution, I think, might be a bit strong. I think it's an evolution more than that. A lot of researchers and marketers have been adopting these techniques to help them understand the answers to their questions, which I think is a good thing. But I think we're still in early days. I mean, Miller Brown has done a lot of work in the adoption of these techniques, and as I say, for us, integrating them into traditional techniques is really the key. I've had conversations with clients who really sort of have the idea that, okay, fine, we don't have to do surveys anymore. We can just put a couple of electrodes on people's heads and we'll know everything we need to know. I think that will never be true. And these techniques have a lot to offer and can help us kind of unlock the doors to things that were difficult to understand, but they will never replace the things we've been doing for these many years.
And do you think that neuroscience techniques provide a greater ability to tap into consumers' unspoken thoughts and feelings than traditional techniques? And if not, where does the value come from in terms of some of these techniques?
The truth is that there are some things that either people are uncomfortable talking about or are difficult to articulate. I have a friend who is telling me if you ask a guy who's, you know, watched an ad or something, you know, how did that make you feel? They'll say, oh, good, which is, you know, gee, could you elaborate on that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very difficult for people to kind of convey the nuance of their feelings. They may feel uncomfortable doing that. Likewise, when you're talking about kind of higher order or abstract ideas about, you know, what does a brand mean to me and how do I really feel about it? I could say the car is reliable or it drives well, but is it something that, you know, sort of enhances my life or makes me feel better about myself? Those are things you may not even know that you know. And I think the value in these techniques is getting at those kinds of thoughts and feelings. They're extremely good at getting at kind of underlying emotions that people either can't articulate or are difficult to articulate, as well as other underlying ideas or concepts they may have about the brand that they may not even be aware of. They're not fully processed or fully conscious. So it's those sorts of things. There's sort of more ephemeral things alongside the things that are fully processed and fully conscious that they can articulate. That two of those things really provide a more nuanced story.
You know, to play devil's advocate for just a second, there are those in the industry who are saying that, you know, basically if neuroscience techniques are really only serving to validate existing methodologies, is it really worth the what can be an often hefty price tag?
Right.
I
completely agree with you. And it as in any engagement where we're trying to understand the answer or get the answer to a question, it's sort of, what's the question, what are the best techniques to apply to answer that question? Sometimes neuroscience techniques are appropriate, sometimes they're not. And that should always kind of be our guiding principle. You use the tools that you have that are best suited to the problem you're trying to solve. If all you're doing is kind of confirming what you could have learned through another approach, it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Because you're adding cost without adding any value. And we've done this ourselves when we're looking at what we're doing. It's like I can get this answer using an explicit survey approach, and I can get some added information by using implicit associations or eye tracking or mm-hmm. something else. It's only worth doing if you're getting additional information that, and not just like a teeny tiny little incremental piece, but something sufficient to justify the cost.
Right.
Because I don't want to go to my clients and say, oh, you know, we have something new and fancy and a bright shiny object that you can employ. If it's not going to tell you more than you're going to learn from doing something that costs half as much, there's really no point.
Right. Now, within your neuroscience practice, Millward Brown has tested consumer response to brands and advertising in using a number of these techniques. And I'm wondering if you could touch on any sort of high-level takeaways you've gotten from those learnings.
We've done, and we do have a global practice, so we've done this around the world. We use these things for testing advertising and communications development. We've done it for concept testing, for testing logos, for just looking at kind of overall in brand equity, sort of, you know, how do people feel about brands? What do the brands mean to them? Their emotional reactions to the brand. And we have, in fact, recently we conducted a concept test for a new positioning for a prescription medication, and the explicit work sort of showed that while some of the concepts performed well in some dimensions and in other ways, they were not doing so well. Mm-hmm. And this was among healthcare professionals. Mm-hmm. And it was, they really wanted to kind of understand what was the affinity of the physicians to medication, sort of what did it say to them about the value of the medication for when they were thinking about prescribing for their patients. And the explicit work sort of said, okay, well, this one is doing okay, but it's not doing so well in other things. And we used our implicit associations to kind of get at that real kind of, because they were responding in sort of rational prescribing physicians and kind of looking mm-hmm. at the facts and responding to the facts. And when we used the implicit association measures, we got a sort of a window into how those concepts resonated with them as far as caring for their patients were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did that, we learned that there was one concept that really kind of was head and shoulders above the others and really helped guide their decision. So they learned things from both of the techniques, but one of them really kind of helped them make a decision.
Oh, that's great. You know, a recent Advertising Research Foundation panel concluded that the value of neuroscience techniques is really largely dependent on interpretation, just as it is with traditional research techniques. I'm wondering if you can give our listeners any advice or recommendations as to how they should assess whether they should be adding neuroscience techniques into their mix when it comes to obtaining consumer insights.
And I actually was at the ARF and kind of looked at their interim report, and I think that what they said and recommended was very sensible, and I think something, quite honestly, that most of the people involved in this arena already feel, that
mm-hmm.
these techniques make sense. Depending upon the question you're asking, you should go in with eyes wide open, know what you're doing, understand what the technique can and cannot deliver, and use it in conjunction with other techniques, explicit, you know, conventional research tools, to help you tell a fuller story.
Mm-hmm.
They in no way are meant to replace the things that we're currently using. They really are meant to be enhancements. So I think that what they said was perfectly sensible, but I think something that those of us who are practitioners kind of already abide by.
Right. You know, you mentioned a couple techniques that Millward Brown looked at, which is, you know, eye tracking, brainwave measurement, association measurement. I'm wondering if you can give us any ideas of scenarios where those particular techniques might make most sense for researchers, and, you know, any sort of, you know, caveats about using them.
Eye tracking really is sort of what it says. So if you're interested in understanding, you know, what about the stimulus you're presenting or whatever it is you're looking at captures visual attention. What am I looking at? How long am I looking at it? What are the things that really capture my attention? It's really pretty straightforward and can be very valuable in understanding, you know, you're looking at a store shelf or you're looking at a print advertisement or, you know, even a TV ad, anything you want to see. How are people working their way through it visually?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very useful diagnostic. The brainwave measurement, we've partnered with MSense
mm-hmm.
For communications and creative assessment. And our copy testing system, which we have a huge database, a global database, which we kind of use that in MSense in conjunction with our copy testing. And the two things together really provide a great analysis of how the advertising is working. So Link provides a really solid, holistic evaluation of the creative, both kind of with closed-ended and rigorous rating scales, but also with a lot of open-ended diagnostic questions, so we can
okay.
get a sense of how the advertising is working. And MSense really provides for us sort of a moment-by-moment evaluation of both the cognitive and emotional response that,
mm-hmm.
that people are having while they're viewing the ad. So the two things together can really help us provide a really complete picture and very useful diagnostics for optimizing the creative.
Mm-hmm.
So we have found it, and our clients have found it, given the fact that they come back and use it again and again, to be a really powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a real practical application of neuroscience.
Absolutely. And the implicit measurement is really quite flexible. We can use it for, as I talked about, for brand evaluation, brand equity, logo testing, product development, product naming. It really has a broad range of applications. It can use for being in creative development as well, so what kind of emotions am I evoking? So that technique really has a lot of flexibility and can be applied in a lot of situations.
There seems to also be a lot of excitement out there generated about facial coding, process of reading others' expressions. I'm wondering
mm-hmm.
what your take is on this and where you see this fitting it into the researcher's toolbox, so to speak.
Right. We're actually investigating that as well. One of the issues, when we see things, we're surprised or we're frightened or we're pleased, we don't really have a lot of control over our facial muscles, which is the value of the technique, because it really is kind of gets at those really visceral responses to things. But there are cultural differences in the extent to which people express things. It's also very subjective in a sense, and it's kind of labor intensive at this point because someone has to sit and look and decide what exactly it is that your face is telling me. There are now, I believe, several agencies who are developing or working on more automated approaches. So they may not take you all the way to Bright, but get you close enough that you can then do it and it becomes more scalable than it currently is. But we think there's great value in that, and we ourselves are in kind of investigating it.
I know we're running short here on time, so I just have one last question,
which
is, I know a lot of researchers have heard about and been reading a lot about neuroscience. Some probably have not yet sort of put their foot in the water in that. Maybe they think it's not applicable to their daily work. But I wonder if you can offer any advice or recommendations for, you know, traditional researchers who are looking at neuroscience. What should they keep in mind when they are considering incorporating neuroscience techniques into their research toolbox?
There really are a lot of agencies out there now. Some really are just purely kind of neuromarketing agencies, and they'll say, I'll do, you know, whatever technique I have, and here it is, and good luck. As I've said before, I really think the key is to think of these as enhancements to the techniques that we've been using for years. Do your homework. Look at the experience that the agency has, look at what they've provided, what information are you going to get, and is that going to be useful to you?
Mm-hmm.
Just as any of our clients would, if they had a project, they would evaluate the agencies who came in and said, here's what I can do for you. Apply the same kind of rules of evaluation that you would there. Is what they're offering make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe it? Can it provide value and help you answer your questions?
Yeah, those are really great insights about a great way to look at marketing neuroscience techniques and how researchers can really integrate them into their overall sort of research toolbox. We've been talking today to Barbara O'Connell. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience. Look for information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting marketingpower.com/podcasts, and make sure you sign up for the RSS feed at Marketing Power so you're aware of all of the podcast series available to you. For more insights on this topic from Barb, be sure to register for AMA's free virtual event on May 10th, 2011, called Marketing and Neuroscience, What Drives Customer Decisions. Information on this event and how to register can be found in the events channel on marketingpower.com. Until next time, I've been your host, Nancy Piccalo. Thank you for joining us.